All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is That's Criminal with myself, John Stamp. And you know what? Tonight is just a little different. I'm sitting down with Brian Liebelt, a good friend of mine, former federal law enforcement officer, combat veteran, expert at inshore saltwater fishing. And one of the things we tend to do on a regular basis is sit down and start solving all the world's problems pretty much all at once. And so we're doing this last time, and we decided what we probably should do is record it, because we're very entertaining people. And that was a little bit of sarcasm, but pretty entertaining. But what we like to do is we were like, what would we talk about? And we usually end up talking about crap like conspiracy theories, government stuff, mysteries, secrets, all the stuff that makes for good conversation, especially around a bottle of scotch. So for tonight, I was like, hey, let's just sit down and record this and see what it sounds like. So I'm introducing Brian Liebelt. Welcome to the That's Criminal.
Pleasure being here. This is awesome. I know we've talked about this for a while, so this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just taken a long time for us to actually be able to get together and make this happen. But like I said, usually it's on a weekend by a fire or something like that, and we just pretty much decide to solve all problems. So what we decided we wanted to do is we picked out a couple different conspiracy theories, some that are actually true and others that I guess we'll go with probably are true, just haven't been proven yet. And just kind of see where we go. And I will, Brian had a good one. So we'll let you go first.
All right. So I just want to, like, am I the first non-author that you've had on?
Yeah. No, I had a movie director on. I had Matt Gentile from American Murder on. Technically. He might have written the screenplay. I don't know.
Because I guess I found out recently, I guess I'm technically an author. And of course, I didn't find this that way. I've known it for a little while, but I don't know if we've talked about this. But so I wrote a paper in college that got published in the university journal, right? And at the time, I didn't really think much about it. It was more or less like a... I don't know. I was probably having a little bit too much fun at the time. So I was amazed that I even got in there. And the interesting part was I found this out much later. That paper, did I tell you the story?
You got to remind me of what the paper was about. And
I wrote the paper about the French-Algerian war. So when
that one's not right.
Algeria, it was like France's second Vietnam, I guess. So they were, you know, they had obviously, you know, colonized parts of northern and I think mostly northern Africa, but you know, like Africa was split up. It was like the Belgians, the British, the Germans, the Dutch to some extent, and then the French, right? They all kind of split up Africa. Well, in like the post-colonial period, you know, the Algerians decided like we don't want any part of this anymore. So we're gonna revolt. And what was interesting was there was a lot of, you know, parallels between at the time, you know, the Iraqi insurgency, which I, you know, I was there in 2003, 2004, and what was going on at the time in Algeria, and like what kind of lessons we could learn from that. Well, I wrote that paper, and as it turns out, I found this out about a year ago, it was the subject of an entire day in a West Point class.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was like, I went through like on Google Scholar, you can go and look and see like who cited your work.
Yeah.
You know, and I was cited by some guy going through the Japanese like war college. And oddly enough, they write their papers in English. So weird. But and then I Googled it, and I was like, oh, you know, there's this syllabus from this class, and it was a 400 level West Point class. So, you know, it's good to know, but I wish I'd have known that, I don't know, like 10 years ago. So I can, you know, more than that, actually 15 years ago. So I could put it on a resume or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Chase a book deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess technically I'm an author, but I'm, you know, I don't write much anymore other than for work. So
if it's curriculum, it's curriculum. It still counts. It still says written by. That's and it's so how when you weren't at West Point when you wrote that, you were at you went to college, Western
Connecticut State University, which is like no one knows that exists. I mean, I guess if you're from Connecticut, like it's just a, you know, it's a state school. It's where I was doing my undergrad at the time. And somebody must have found it, some West Point professor, he's like a colonel, lieutenant colonel or something, who found it and decided like, oh, this is a, you know, this was written by some low rent enlisted guy, you know, like you should probably give these officers some kind of perspective. But it was super interesting to find out. But
well, that's funny. I'm just trying to work out the logistics of it, because, you know, in college, at least for my undergrad, I wrote whatever I thought the teacher would want to hear. And then, but I never, you don't actually think, because it has to, like, to cite something, it has to be published someplace or in a database someplace where you can get attribution for it. So like, I'm wondering like how random this dude must have just been, you know what we're gonna work on today? Algeria. And it's like, oh, Liebelt's got some good ideas.
Well, where I went and did my undergrad was not really that far, like, geographically from West Point. So there was a lot of, it wouldn't have surprised me if one of the, you know, social science professors at my university decided, oh, this would be really cool, let me send it to my buddy that's over at West Point. I mean, I have no idea. I have the syllabus. I downloaded it to save it for posterity. But I'm sure he probably won't remember like how he came across this, but there was somebody informed me recently that I guess ethically speaking, they should have reached out to me before doing that. But, you know, it's not like I would have been able to collect royalties from West Point or something. You know?
So it would have gone to Western Connecticut University anyway.
Yeah, it would have been really, really nice to know. I bet, you know, what you don't realize when you get published in those journals, basically, like, you sell your soul, you know.
There's no rights
to the university whatsoever. They can just use it, you know. It's all very interesting. But I guess I'd like to point out, and like you and I were talking about this earlier, that, you know, conspiracies aren't always, I guess, bad. I think, you know, to point certain things out, if you think about federal legislation, which we were kind of talking of earlier before we came on, about, you know, Jekyll Island and the creation of the Fed, which is kind of like a local conspiracy theory, like you can read into it, like, we know it happened, right? We're like, JP Morgan and his buddies were all sitting around, like, you know, smoking cigars and some, you know, I mean, those mansions are still there over on Jekyll Island.
I was actually just there last night. I was there yesterday.
Oh, really?
Walking around. Yep. Walking around the Christmas tree.
Yeah. Guys, you know, old dudes sitting around like drinking fine scotch and cigars and going like, you know, let's alter the course of history.
Exactly. And you know, this country needs 10 guys in charge of all the money.
That's what this country needs. I mean, thus far, it's pretty much worked out for us. So I don't know that it's a totally bad thing. I mean, and again, it's all subjective to, you know, what your beliefs are and what side of the conspiracy you're on, right? You're either a conspirator or you're, you know, alleged like victim of the conspiracy, right? Where, like, another example we were talking about was, you know, the revolution, right? If you were a loyalist, then you were looking at the, you know, the separatist faction of, you know, the colonials, you would probably call that a conspiracy, which it was, right? And I was watching something the other night about like all along the lines of the Civil War, right? So like a lot of the guys that I guess I have to do more research into this, but like a lot of the guys that were really hardline Confederates actually left the country, and they got hired down in Brazil to run like plantations down in Brazil.
Nice. Yeah. I guess because
they had the experience and background, that kind of thing. But yeah, there was something else I was meaning to
early strike busters. go from Civil War to
like Pinkerton detective kind of dudes, you know.
Right.
I think one of the other things I was meaning to look up was like what happened to the loyalists after, and I'm sure it probably wasn't good for them, right? when our conspiracy to create a new nation was finally fulfilled, right? Like, we all know that happened, right?
They're the first ones. They're the first ones with the American flag hanging out the window. They're like, well, let's change the narrative. Well,
yeah.
The thing you mentioned. You know, conspiracy today, we, you know, some idiot gets on TikTok and suddenly just shoots out anything he wants. And that could be a conspiracy theory making like something the Wall Street Journal is commenting on within a day. You're talking about, you know, the what went into even building the Federal Reserve. Think about the communication lines back then. Like,
oh yeah,
conspiracies built on rumor and built on that message game that used to exist. And think about just somebody even in D.C. I mean, all these guys come down from New York and D.C. and that metro area on their private trains to South Georgia, sit around the Jekyll Island Club with some scotch and just be like, yeah, we should probably control the money. This country has no idea what it's doing. You know, the elected officials are buffoons. We own them all anyway. Let's just control the money and we can disperse it. And there, you know, there was some barman or a waiter who's sitting there being like, these guys are nuts. And he tells his cousin's jumping on the public train. His cousin makes it back to DC. He's like, you wouldn't believe what these freaking guys are talking about. It starts to spread around DC. Suddenly it is a conspiracy theory. And then Christmas Day of 1913, they're like, well, actually we signed the legislation. It's not a conspiracy theory anymore.
We own your money. It's definitely for real. We have control of all the money. I think, you know, I mean, I guess it all depends on, you know, your perspective on that. Like, again, I don't know that the Federal Reserve is an entirely bad thing, but I think that with conspiracies like that, I think back then it was probably a lot easier to conceal and to do things like that, because there was the restriction on the flow of information. Like, you talked about a barman talking to his cousin and then somebody's getting on a train going to DC. And it's like, now it's so much easier. Right.
Oh, yeah.
But it also, what's also interesting is like the levels of disinformation that are out there, you know? And in a way it, like, if you looked at things like, was a recent one, like the flat earth thing. Like,
oh, I love that.
It's absolutely hilarious that some of these guys, and I was watching something earlier where like one of these guys was like doing his own like experiment to prove that the earth is flat. And then he does the experiment and it proves that the earth's not flat. Like, it's funny.
I will indulge those people all day long. Like the last Musk Starship launch. Like all like 32 of those freaking, I don't know, whatever the guy's shooting up into space. But, you know, the whole point of the thing is to have stage separation and to make it to a certain level. You know, they accomplished what the mission was to be able to separate Starship from the main booster. And then the main booster explodes. And all I saw on X was firmament. I guess they call it the firmament is real. Like, the shield that keeps you from, like, we can't actually reach the stars. The flat earth is just holes in the ceiling, apparently. Yeah, they're all just commenting on the firmament is real. And this thing wasn't that that the ship, you know, just malfunctioned. It was that the ship actually hit the shield that blocks the sky, that keeps the sky from, you know, drifting off into space or over the ice flow or whatever these flat earth guys believe. I was like, I love all of you. Like, will you guys just please continue talking? Like, so we can't reach space. We've never made it to space. We hit our bubble and we hit that little glass bubble because apparently we live in a snow globe that rocket ships built by billionaires can't make it through.
No, you bring up an interesting point, right? Like, if Elon Musk was that dumb, which I don't think he is, he's got some crazy ideas, but like, what, he's a smart dude, you know? He's more or less like a, I kind of would compare him to like a, who's the guy that ran Apple for
him,
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs.
Why don't I say I would compare him to like a Steve Jobs, you know, where he's like, he's kind of a director, you know, he's got ideas and he leaves it up to the technical people to, but then I also hear that he gets involved in some of the technical stuff. So, but like the interesting point there is like, if Elon Musk is that dumb, like you would, if he's in some elite billionaire club that knows that the Earth has this, like, what did you call it? The firmament, this barrier.
Yeah, I saw hashtag firmament is real. And I was like, this rabbit hole is going to be deep. It might not be very deep. It's probably going to be very shallow, but it's going to be full of very crazy people. I'm going to love every second of it.
Yeah. And the idea that Elon Musk is just like, let's just throw a bunch of money and see if we can, like knowing, right, that he's going to hit this wall, or like, it's a monumental, like, waste of money, and it makes no sense. But
and especially when we talk flat earthers, I love the fact that there's so many of them on YouTube, dependent on mass communication, that is basically built at some point. You reach satellites, and satellites only work as they can bounce around the globe. But their followers, you know, they can have followers in China, Africa, Thailand, opposite sides of hemispheres. And they're like, yeah, the Earth is flat. Like, I don't know where you guys are, but I have, you know, here's my people in China. And they just ignore the fact that they have all their communication lines are dependent on a ring of satellites surrounding a sphere floating in the middle of nowhere.
I think that's part of the problem with, like, I'm a avid watcher of YouTube, right? But you have to have, like, let's face it, like, your average human being is average, you know. They not that I'm the smartest guy on the planet, but I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of gullibility, you know, in the population. And like, I think when people turn on YouTube and they watch something about, you know, the president being a lizard person or something, they're like, oh wow. Or some of that CGI stuff, which is actually getting kind of crazy, where they can put like I was watching this video where it's like they had the royal family like up on a balcony, and like their eyeballs didn't move. Did you see that?
Yep.
Like,
yeah, thought they were all robots. Who's the basketball commentator? Who's it was just a little while ago, a basketball commentator that was getting mic'd up. And they were saying that he was an android or something, because he was standing so still, and the same thing, his eyes just weren't working. So there was giant, giant scroll of how, what the hell is that dude's name? But I can't think of it, but it's the same thing. Like, everybody wants their tribe. It's just, you know, you go on YouTube and, you know, you find your, you know, Bigfoot is a interdimensional species, and they can actually, you know, they can cloak, they can go invisible, and they just kind of zap in here and there. And these people are like, yes, that is my Bigfoot. That is my tribe. That's my league. And then they run into the next channel on YouTube that says, well, Bigfoot's just a big ape, and we just haven't really figured him out yet. And they start banging on all these people saying they're insane because they are so deadly loyal to their particular tribe that this is how Bigfoot works, even though nobody's ever actually found them before. They like you say, all these people, they just want something to cling to. And it's like, damn, ask a question every now and then.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of that, like doubling down on stuff because you're so heavily invested in it. And from, you know, I mean, we've all done it where it's like, we have this certain belief and you just don't want to give up on it. I guess that's a human thing. And we were talking about tribes, like, you know, humans at the end of the day, no matter how we, you know, slice society, we're tribal based, you know, you identify with people, like, you know, when you're in law enforcement, you tend to identify with people that are in law enforcement because it's a, you know, it's a tribe. But, and especially when we're looking at like some of the use of force stuff that happened over like the last 3 years with like George Floyd, and like, we all have our opinions on it, but what ends up happening is, we kind of get into this like echo chamber of like ideas and, you know, how we perceive things should work. And, but I think it's a lot of the same kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. And it's not going to, and it's, that's the thing. It's, you know, there's so many well-meaning people. And I think that that flag waving on social media, people think that you have to like have a fight and a flag to wave and charge at the enemy on social media. And it's, that one is a perfect example. That George Floyd stuff is, so many guys will like get up and be like, here's how use of force works. Here's how policy works. Here's a action versus reaction. Here's the, you know, whatever the, you know, the reactionary gap, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Whatever. And, you know, they'll get up there and they'll get, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers, and it'll all be all our same tribe. It's all us being like, oh, you're absolutely right. You're killing it. Right. You're dead on. They're going to understand this. And there's nobody from the other side that's even going to bother even looking at it.
No,
it doesn't even make it into their feed. It doesn't even make it in their algorithm. So inside social media, when all these guys are trying to change public opinion and affect the world for whatever their version of good is, those spheres don't even cross. It's just
no, because I think there's a human need to turn things into a black and white situation, you know, where it's like, this is bad, this is good, right? I think on some level, we oftentimes try to ignore the middle ground, you know, because it doesn't align with, you know, what our beliefs are. And we kind of rely, I guess, in some form or fashion, like with, or factor with, relying on fact finders, right? Like judges. And even that, which is odd now, is like, it's kind of conspiratorial, where it's like, you'll see news articles about, you know, the Supreme Court and how the, you know, the justices are, you know, making all these decisions because they're, you know, they're political. And I think on some level that's probably true, but it's also, it's their view on how the Constitution is supposed to be interpreted, right? And whether that's conservative or, you know, liberal or what have you. I mean, that is what it is. But at the end of the day, they're, you know, they're fact finders. They're supposed to make judgments. But there's this, I read something recently where somebody in my social media feed was like, you know, the Supreme Court should be elected. I'm like, let's give the mob like more control. Like that's a great idea. And you know, we're going to turn into, you know, ancient Greece real quick. Like that's why our forefathers decided to, you know, form a republic with an electorate and everything.
With three branches that can check on each other. And I think everybody's lost that. I think out of all the political problems that we have, and I mean this judge thing, I mean it is exactly every time a judge makes a call, it depends on who appointed him, and you have to go through three different headlines to actually get some idea of what the actual story is, because every outlet that covers it by via its own bias. So if you do actually, those people who actually do try to stay skeptical and think for themselves instead of grasping that flag, it's harder and harder to do that. And actually those outlets are the kind of point at those independents and those individual thinkers as extremists in and of themselves, but they're the extremists that everybody can hate. The left and the right can hate those people because they're not joining either gang. It's like being the one kid that's trying not to get jumped into a gang. It's just easier to hate everybody. But yeah.
I'm trying to see what this guy's, I think it's, you follow Ground News on Instagram? Yeah, I'm one of those guys who gets his news from Instagram.
I get my news from multi places. That's the only thing I can confirm is that there's only so much of any given, like I don't know if I'm just too jaded at this point, but there's no major news network that I can listen to for more than 5 minutes without just getting nauseous. Like I just can't.
What's interesting about Ground News is one of the things they'll do is they'll look at like some of these different stories, and they'll look to see, you know, what side of the spectrum, either left, center, or right, is actually covering the story. So you'll get to see like this one headline is like, world's richest 1% emit as much carbon as the bottom two thirds. And it looks like that's been evenly reported across the, you know, the spectrum, I guess.
I just found it followed by Bandit Custom Rods.
Yep. Yeah. 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 There you go. So, but they'll do these, I forget what exactly they call them, but they'll lay out, like, they'll take a headline and they'll lay out what each headline says from each end of the political spectrum. Nice. And it's interesting to watch and see how, like, you know, the narrative kind of forms amongst these different news outlets.
All sides. I follow All Sides. AllSides.com does the same thing. It'll give a bias rating to to each article and just kind of rank them. But it's like left, right, center for but instead of the board game, it's news articles.
Yeah. This is an interesting one. It's a Colombia begins sterilization of hippos descended from the pets of drug kingpin Pablo Escobar. I didn't know Pablo Escobar owned hippos, but
that's apparently not the hippos' fault.
You don't want the hippos, like, I guess they got released into the wild, according to what this says. So they got, like, hippos running around in Colombia.
That's there's enough scary stuff in South America. Do you really need to add hippos to it? I still, though, if the hippos are making it in the Amazon, I'm enough of a tree hugger. I gotta say, I disagree with that. But what side is it slant to? Like, if we're in Colombia and you're for or against euthanizing hippos that belong to Escobar?
No, they're what side of the spectrum are you on? They're just, okay, you know, cutting their nuts off, I guess, or whatever. So
I don't want that job.
No, that would be a terrible job. And I mean, imagine, that's the most dangerous land animal on the planet.
And how do you even dart something that big? Like, how big does that dart have to be? That's insane.
They're big. They're angry. Like, have you ever seen them, like, chase boats?
Yeah, they're angry, like, all the time.
They push a wake, man. Like, they're huge. I mean, they're basically, like, I don't know what, like, side of the evolutionary spectrum they're on, but, like, how do you get that big? And they're just gnarly looking creatures.
Yeah, they got such a, like, if you look at them, they look very peaceful, but they're just angry all the time. Like, they're just, they can gallop. I don't trust anything that can gallop underwater.
That's nuts, man. It's crazy. I mean, they're basically like they're an alligator, but much, much larger and with, like, big feet, you know, and legs.
Yeah.
I know, like, they kill people at a rate and frequency, like, higher than any other animal on the planet.
Yeah, I had to look them up a little bit for Blood Red Ivory, because that's not a bad thing. You get to learn a lot of stuff, but you do end up spending a lot of time. I needed, like, probably 6 pages where I could discuss hippo movement at night, and they come up on land at night and eat and blah blah blah. But I guess they have a better kill rate than, like, crocodiles and stuff. Like, the stuff that looks like it really wants to kill you. Like, the hippo just looks like a big buffalo, but, you know, that's wet all the time. But those things, I definitely would not want to be the guy sterilizing them.
Who'd have thought that, you know, there was a point, maybe some kind of educational point when we were kids behind, like, hungry, hungry, hungry hippos.
It is. You know? Yeah. It was a tale. It was a fairy tale, like a grim story tale. Yeah. A grim fairy tale.
Yeah. And instead of marbles, it's like, you know, people, right?
Yeah, those are the heads of children.
It's terrible. But,
all right. So I'm a guy, and I'm even, let's just say you're a veterinarian in Colombia, and suddenly you get a call one day and the government is creating a program to sterilize hippos. That's an immediate no. That's immediate no for me. I'm involved in other projects at the time.
I mean, for me, I guess it would depend, you know, I'm assuming I'm going to have access to, like, dart guns or something that I could take these things out with.
Are you though?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Like, maybe you have, like, who is that guy? He was one of the main characters in Jurassic Park, and he was, like, the game warden. What was his name? It was Robert Muldoon.
Muldoon. Yep, Robert Muldoon.
Clever. If you're like a Robert Muldoon and you like hire somebody to like, you know, take these things down and then, you know, you do whatever you need to do to sterilize them or whatever. I guess it would just depend on how much money I was getting paid.
It'd have to be Batman money. It's just looking at that thing, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're, you know, running around in the jungle with no other support and just like a scalpel. You know what I mean? Like we have to like sneak up on him,
catch him on a sleeping. Like,
yeah. Nope. Something tell me like that the hippo would wake up and probably not be very happy.
As long as you catch, I guess, yeah, there's just no good way of doing it. And Muldoon, those guys never make it. Those guys are always, you know, they look like they know what they're doing, but they always walk themselves right into the trap. So that dude's getting stomped on. He's the first one to go. It's the intern that's going to make it.
Clever girl. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. I don't know when you researched hippos, was it like, are they like ambush predators, like crocodiles?
No, they're like, the way I read it, I mean, it's basically, they're just big territorial monsters. Like it's like the bisons in Yellowstone. Some idiot goes up and wants to like pet it. And it's like, I'm going to enjoy crushing you. And that's like, if you come into its zone, you're going to get challenged. Like you say, it kicks a freaking wape while it's chasing boats. But if they come up on land at night, I guess if you stumble into that zone, they can't be that fast, but that's, you know, it's a problem. It's nighttime in like Africa. That's not good.
And they're yeah, heads. Yeah.
You got an angry car coming to get you.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, like, I know probably the most dangerous land animal in North America is the moose. Right. And the moose is very similar, where it's territorial. And like at certain times of the year, you know, when they're, I don't know if you call it a rut or whatever, like they do with deer, but when they're breeding and they have, you know, little moose, plural, right?
Moose.
Yeah. When you have that, I think, or is it like goose where it's like, you call it a mander?
I'd go with moose. I don't know.
Meese, yeah, just moose.
That's just a mander.
Yeah, we need somebody, an expert in grammar, to figure that one out.
That's why I hire editors.
I imagine it's fairly similar, but what was interesting, like in the animal world, is you know, lions. So like all the females do the hunting because the males.
It's meese.
It's what?
I was not going to be able to move on with the rest of my day until I figured this out. So I had to go in, and it's what's the plural of moose? According to Grammar Monster, the plural of moose is moose. Oh shit. Never mind. Plural of moose is moose. It's not mooses or meese. I just saw meese and I was like, holy shit. We're right.
We're dead wrong
on that.
No, it's moose or moose, right? You could sit. Well, like if you're getting stalked by, you know, a pack of moose, right?
Yeah.
Like, which I don't know if it's real. Like, let's assume that that's real for a hot second. Then you had to take some kind of like tactical move. And it's like you and your buddies, like, oh, there's a, like they're hunting you like a raptor or something, you know? It's like, oh, there's a moose. Yeah. Or like when somebody could get confused, do you mean plural, like there's more than one moose, or do you mean singular, like there's just one moose over there?
Yeah, we have to run. The moose are coming, but there's six of them. It's like, okay, how motivated are you between one moose and six? Pretty freaking. I'm freaking motivated already. I've seen one of those up close, and it doesn't look like it should exist. I mean, they look really.
No, they're huge.
Yeah,
the first one,
but. They're weird.
The first one I ever saw, it was early, early in the morning. My dad and I were driving. We were driving to the Farmington River to go fishing for trout. And it was like super early, like sipping on coffee, still kind of like got the brain fog going on, you know. And we're up like driving these, you know, back roads to where we were going to fish. And we drive by this field. And we both kind of glance off into the field, and there's a moose standing in the field, right? Yeah. And, you know, in Connecticut, you don't see them very much, right?
That's
like
rare.
They usually make their way down from, like, you know, northern Massachusetts or New Hampshire, Vermont. And we paused for like 30 seconds and then we both looked at each other and we're like, did you just see that? I think that was a move. Because I thought it was one of those like things that you put up in a field to keep the geese out, you know, like decoy or something, you know? So my dad throws it in reverse and we go back to the field. There's like, no, there's a moose standing out there. Yeah. Cause you can see, cause the ears flapping, you know?
Yeah. And that moose does not care that there's two humans like looking at it. The moose is like, this is my field. Yeah. I was, in Idaho, we're heading back to camp after elk hunting and, come up on top of this hill and the dude just stops for a minute. And I just looked to my right and it's just light enough that this dude is, you know, 20 feet away and he's just staring at us. And was like, that thing's I'm 6 foot tall and I'm standing in the bed of a side by side. So that puts me not 8 to 9 feet off the ground, probably, but probably closer to 10. And I swear to God, our eyes were like level. Like that, it was just a monster animal. It was just,
they'll stomp you to death the wrong time of year. You know, I mean, that happens quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, apparently he was cool because we just drove off, but it was like, it's like the first time you see an alligator, like an alligator eyeballs you and you're like, yeah, we're not the same. Like this alligator is just looking at you. Like, if I get my chance, I'm probably going to eat you. Like, you know, and with the moose is the same thing. It's like, we're not the same here. This is, you know, I'm bigger than you are.
Yeah. Well, speaking of animals, you and I were kind of talking about this, the animal spy conspiracy theories, which on some level, I think, you know, based on what I was reading, a lot of it is, it's plausible, right?
I can see it.
So, you know, we used to use carrier pigeons. And when I was looking up carrier pigeons as part of the research for this podcast, I was kind of astounded that carrier pigeons have like a 95% success rate.
And is it that those minerals in their head, like, I mean, they use them to do what they did. I mean, so yeah, I mean, they have if you can train them right, I guess, but I've never really understood how the carrier pigeon was like, you can tell me to go this way, but I'm really just going to go back.
It has everything to do with magnetic fields from what I understand. And I don't know how much research has been done on this, but it has to do with, you know, their relation to, I think, the poles. And I mean, if you think about it, with birds and stuff, I mean, how do, you know, when it starts getting cold up north, you get certain species of birds that are just like, man, I'm going to Florida, right?
Yeah, I'm out.
And what's gnarly is they tend to end up in like the same places, right? Where they'll, when they fly south, like, which makes sense, you know, as far as carrier pigeons go. But I was astounded to know that they had like a 95% success rate, that they actually go back to where they're supposed to go. And it has something else to do with like colored panels too. I was reading like they'll put out like certain colors that they can discern, and then that's where they know where to land.
I don't understand where the institutional knowledge of that comes from. Like, I get that there's probably people been breeding pigeons for centuries, I guess, before they, aren't they the ones that went extinct? Didn't carrier pigeons go extinct?
Like, I don't know.
Are they
carrier pigeons? I'm pretty sure they're still, we can look that up, man.
But stuff that you sent me, I do remember the beluga like whale in Norway, like that one that just showed up, a beluga whale hanging out around fishing vessels with a camera strapped to its head that says property of St. Petersburg, seems very suspicious when it comes to the animal being in use of a spy agency.
Yeah. And I think it says here that they're just homing pigeons. I think carrier pigeon might be extinct. I'm not entirely sure, but
passenger pigeon.
It's like English carrier pigeon is a particular breed of pigeon. But they historically send messages
Bred for its ability to find
carrier
its way home.
Blood. Yep. One reason they're still commonly but erroneously called carrier pigeons. I mean, the only thing I know about pigeons is they eat stuff off the sidewalk.
Yeah, they're like flying rats.
Yeah, basically. I mean, and that's probably partially our doing too, because we leave stuff out for them. But
well, I mean, the thing is, though, I mean, if you think about it, if we're talking about the use of these creatures in espionage, I mean, they have a proven track record. I mean, it wasn't like most of World War One used with the pigeon communication and other the like from the trenches and stuff like that.
So yeah, I don't know if it was used for you know, espionage necessarily. Obviously, like battlefield communication is, you know, in the first World War is probably one of the biggest problems that they had, right? Because if you want to, you know, effectively, I guess, shoot, move, and communicate, like communications, you know, one of the legs on the milk stool, I guess. And if you can't do that, and, you know, field telephones, you know, they only go so far.
All by, you know, spooled wire at that point.
You know, the wire, right? The wire can only go so far, because the longer the wire is, the greater, what is it? Amperage or something that you need to, yeah, like get from point A to point B.
Yep.
Which, I mean, you know, it's limited by how far you can go with it. So it makes sense that they would use, you know, homing pigeons, to use the term correctly, to do that. But the other thing was that the Navy actually has, like, and they, you know, they aren't quiet about this, is the Navy has dolphins and sea lions. They have like a certain amount in their inventory that they use for like mine detection and things of that nature. And they train them to do that, which, I mean, dolphins, I guess it makes sense because they, you know, next to humans, they're probably one of the smartest animals on the planet, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's same thing as when we use canines, same general principle, but it seems like an easy transition to using them for some kind of intelligence collection rather than like EOD stuff, you know, the mine sweeping dolphins versus the dolphin that's going to go roll up on a troller someplace and, you know, just swim around it. Like, that seems like an easy target practice thing. Like,
I guess it's not a secret that the Russians actually, I don't know how successful they were, but they were trying to train them to kill.
That's messed up.
Yeah. So we were just like, oh, let's use them to detect mines and stuff. Like, send them places where humans probably aren't. Probably not a good idea to send a human there. But the Russians were actually, and I think that's where a lot of the, like, the Hamas propaganda is, like, oh, the Israelis have, you know, trained dolphins to kill, you know, Hamas frogmen or something.
Yeah, it was, there was one on some of the stuff you sent me that Hamas and Hezbollah seem very, very suspicious of animal spies a lot, most of the time in the literature that we reviewed. But I think they blamed Israel for training a shark. Yep. To training a shark after the shark attacks somebody outside of Egypt. So shark attacks a swimmer in Egypt. And according to Hamas and Hezbollah, that is the fault of the Israelis, which makes sense. I guess if you want to, like, what was it? If you want to find the enemy behind every bush, you know, that whole theory that I think Japanese Hirohito might have said that about America at some point, a gun behind every bush. If you want to find an enemy behind every bush, if a shark attacks somebody in Egypt, that was the Israelis. That's your biggest boogeyman, let's go.
And I'm remiss in thinking that Hamas actually believes that, like that the higher ups actually believe it. I don't think they do. I think on some level, I mean, if you look at like Iran, you know, obviously certain parts of Lebanon with Hezbollah, like it pays to make the Israelis look like some kind of, you know, evil that's training these things to, you know, attack people or, you know, spy or whatever. Because it does two things, right? It energizes your base, right? So it makes
that's your important part.
Your supporters like, yeah. And then it also, you know, it also potentially can increase your operational security, right? So if you're looking at, if you have like all your citizens have eyes, right? And if they're out there looking for, in one case, a buzzard that has like, you know, some kind of Israeli tag on it, because there was that one buzzard that they were tracking its movements, the because griffin they wanted vulture. To bring, yeah, they the grit was a griffin, yeah, they were trying to bring griffin. This griffin back to the Middle East, right? And you know, on some level, I think, you know, Hamas, Hezbollah, like they, I don't think they actually believe it. I think it helps them if they can make people believe that that's true. So it's almost like it's weird. It's a conspiracy inside of a conspiracy, right? A
conspiracy to make use of your base, a conspiracy by the cabal in charge to manipulate your base, which it sounds like every other political organization there is. But when you, I mean, the Hamas guys, the guys in charge of Hamas, they're all billionaires living in Qatar. There's no shot callers, you know, outside the tactical level hanging out in Gaza right now, just seeing how it's going to work out going toe to toe with the IDF. Yeah. These are educated people running a massive.
Well, they certainly have a lot of money.
They certainly have a lot of money. Difference between educated and intelligent, but I mean, it's a massive criminal organization that, you know, has profited off terrorism for decades. So, yeah, but if there's anybody that understands public opinion, it's Hamas. I mean, we just look at the last month, and they've got, you know, any given idiot freshman in any given college has looked at the right reel today, and suddenly they think we need to free Palestine by supporting Hamas without, you know, going three sentences down any given headline to realize that they're supporting people who support genocide. And these are American freshmen doing this.
What was really interesting to me recently, I was looking into this, where does, like, we always talk about like following the money, right? Like, obviously some of the money comes from international aid organizations, and it gets, like, we'll call it misappropriated, you know, has Hamas, we'll talk about Hamas just because that's the current thing. But, you know, obviously like organizations like USAID, the UN, you know, UNICEF, some of these other places, like, I think there's a lot of good that is, the idea is good, but then when you give money to an organization like Hamas, who effectively runs Gaza, right? I guess you have to be comfortable with the fact that, like, that money's just going to get diverted, right?
They
might use it to put on a show, so you give them more money. But what's interesting about the Iranians, and I was reading this recently, that there's this idea that the Iranians know that money's getting siphoned off the top for these dudes that are living in, you know, it's almost like a salary, right?
And so
the Iranians will keep giving money as long as, like, a certain portion of the money is actually used for, you know, these terrorist activities.
Yeah, just mixing it up. But yeah, any given international aid, you expect it. I mean, every place gets the strong men always get the cut off the top. And if you're thinking about, you know, the third world, it's fine. Where we give international aid to Gabon or whatever, name your country, and it's just expected. Yes, they're going to take a cut. But hopefully there's a trickle that actually makes it to the guy or girl on the street and does something. We don't often check, and we often don't evaluate what the productivity or efficiency of our foreign aid is in places like this. But when it comes, it's a different channel when we get to talking about Hamas or Hezbollah, which we are giving them foreign aid now, along with Iran. And the difference here is we have to understand that we are directly in material support of terrorism by funding Hamas. Like, it's different. You know, we're funding, you know, giving money to Gabon is one thing. Yeah, the strongman's going to get his cut, and he's going to continue running his country into the ground. But here we are actually going to fund Hamas to build more rockets and build more and buy more guns and hurt more people, with the hope that some of it still makes it to Gaza City. And then that's a different conversation. I mean, it's one we've had for the last 20 years. I mean, we're funding the Taliban now, right? I mean, we're giving the Taliban $40 million. So, I mean, I guess have we always funded our enemies? If you think about it, going back to Japan, reconstruction in Japan and Germany, can you say it's the same thing? Like, we weren't funding insurgencies then. They were kind of on board. Like, now we're funding our own.
I think
we're
funding insurgencies. Different story. Yeah. I think to a certain extent, too. I mean, if you look at, you know, the Iraqi government, you know, you could say what you want about it, but it is a government and they're still kicking. So thus far, it's been a success, I guess, if you want to do that. But obviously, Afghanistan, I mean, you know, I've been to Afghanistan, and Afghanistan is just not. It's probably the biggest victim of how the British drew colonial borders when they handed these countries over. I mean, obviously, like, obvious victims is like basically every country in the Middle East. That's it's a problem. You got the Iraqis. You essentially have three different countries within one country, right? Mm-hmm. Afghanistan is interesting because I don't think it was ever meant to be a country. Right.
No, it's just a bunch of people living in the hills.
They're basically like, it's a bunch of Kentucky moonshiners, man, that like live up in the mountains, you know, and some of them, you know, make heroin, and some of them sell, you know, like in the eastern part of the country, like the illegal timber trade is like a big deal, big moneymaker for them. And then obviously,
if I had my choice, heroin. If I was an Afghanistan farmer, I would I'd go with heroin. I wouldn't put the work into a timber trade. I don't, I'm going poppies.
Well, if you live in the south of the country, it's very easy to grow poppy. And what's funny is like we helped them to expand their poppy growth. Because we had all these like USAID and, you know, civil affairs and all these programs to like help them to start farming. And the idea was like, hey, let's get them away from, you know, growing opium, and let's get them like growing corn or something. And the Afghans were like, no, corn is stupid. Like, why would we grow corn? There's no money in that. So we helped them, like, you know, setting up irrigation and, you know, teaching them certain things. And then they kind of just started growing more poppy, you know, and
you know, there's a taste
obviously
for
didn't
it.
Help us.
There's a demand. It's and 10 years later, we're like, why is this heroin so good?
Yeah. Why is this such a problem?
Yeah. Why are we having such a problem with heroin right now?
Yeah. And then you had, you know, Chinese labs getting in on the game. Like, well, let's create a synthetic version of this. So that's even more potent and potentially deadly than heroin.
They're always going to chase that dragon.
Interesting thing. That's not really, it's a conspiracy, but it's not crazy, right? That the Chinese government is actively helping to get, you know, fentanyl inside the country.
I think it's been established. I don't know.
I don't know that that's a conspiracy theory anymore. I think that's an actual conspiracy.
I guess depending on if Xi's visiting San Francisco or not will depend on how much we're going to push the fact that China is dropping fentanyl through Mexico. I did notice that. I thought it was kind of funny, and I don't know if it's a result of all the discussion coming out of DC about an anti-cartel task force and all the saber rattling. I guess you know, having war in Ukraine and war in Israel is not enough. We should probably start, you know, decimating cartels on our southern border, which I'm not saying I'm against, but all the saber rattling that's come up in the last couple months, suddenly the cartel is like threatening people's lives if they don't shut down their fentanyl labs and they're threatening people's lives for fentanyl lab songs. I think there was a singer that was threatened or disappeared because they wrote a song about a fentanyl dealer. Like, I love that.
What?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
What's interesting is I was reading something and that, you know, this could be a topic for another time, but I guess there's a new ish cartel within the last like 5-10 years that's run by former like Mexican cops and military guys.
Was that the Zetas? I forget
the name of it. What's that?
Was that the Zetas? The Zetas?
I think that might be the Zetas. Yeah, I think that might be. Yeah. I think that might be true. But yeah, I heard they're like super organized and scary, you know.
Oh yeah,
not as destabilizing as like the Sonora cartel.
Yeah, the original Zetas, they were Zetas or Zetas, whatever they're called. But they were Mexican military and they were trained at Bragg, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah, the School of the Americas. Yeah, right, yeah, the school, much controversy yep. there. Well, yeah, I mean, it's like a professional assassin school, yeah.
If you build a skill set and you suddenly find a market for it, yeah, can't hate it.
Might as well, you know.
Yeah, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah.
Mexican cartel halts fentanyl exports to U.S.
Of course they do. It's capitalism, I guess.
Yeah.
Not any illegal version of capitalism, but it's definitely capitalism.
Capitalism is just capitalism. Laws have very little to do with it.
let's talk real quick. I know we're kind of like, we've been going for about an hour, but I want to talk about Operation Snow White. Because yes. I didn't know this existed until recently. And actually the other day when we were like trading stuff back and forth about different conspiracies, and this is one of them that's like, we know this happened, right? People went to jail for it.
Oh yeah, it's been done.
And hopefully we don't become a target for the Church of Scientology, but Operation Snow White is interesting because Scientology actually infiltrated the federal government.
Yeah.
And it goes along with kind of something I read a long time ago, was that there's a theory that the Church of Scientology is really nothing but a giant tax break for celebrities because they're got its non-profit status, right, as a religious institution.
I think I'm jaded enough to think the same thing of every single church I see. Like I think I'm just that jaded that every church is just a tax scam. Like, especially like the tiny ones that like have like a 8x11 inch sign that says Church of whatever, name your whatever, and it's like kind of, it's like in a strip mall. I'm like, yeah, like that's it. I'd love to see what your congregation looks like.
You know, if you took a look at the Catholic Church over the course of history, this thing is not that crazy. But in modern times, it's pretty nuts, right? They had estimated that Scientology had used upwards of like 5,000 operatives to infiltrate the U.S. government at various levels. And like notably, when I was reading the case, they had these two guys go to work at the IRS as like clerk typists. And then they ended up like gaining access to an assistant U.S. attorney's office and like stealing stuff out of his office. They even stole his keys at one point and made copies of it. Like, crazy stuff, man. And L. Ron Hubbard's like third wife actually went to jail for that whole thing.
Yeah,
but like I was watching on Joe Rogan, they had that, and it's almost unbelievable. But when you read this stuff, it like makes sense. They had what is it? Who's the current head of the Church of Scientology? What's his name?
It's not
David Miscavige.
Okay,
David Miscavige. They had his father on Joe Rogan, and he talked about like people following him around. There was a guy that like tried to like buy the house next to his, and when the cops, like he had an interaction with the cops, and the guy had like a bunch of assault rifles and like umpteen amounts. It was like upwards of 2,000 rounds of ammunition. And he was hired by the church to like follow his father around, because his father had separated from the, and I remember like during the podcast, like that's almost sounded crazy. Right. But then when you read like this thing on Operation Snow White, I mean, it doesn't sound that crazy.
They had operatives working in 30 different countries, infiltrating multiple government organizations, and the IRS guys are talking about using electronic surveillance methods, bugging IRS
they bugged an IRS conference offices room.
Yeah, bugging yeah, offices, yeah, yeah, to make sure they knew what was going on during the meetings. And this I guess they were following a sci-fi writer.
The government was like trying to yank their nonprofit status.
Yep.
And for a church that's like really just trying to hide their, you know, like celebrity tax avoidance, I guess.
Making that money.
They really needed that, you know, obviously for more money to come in, they needed that nonprofit status. So it makes sense that they would, but they bugged like one of the meetings that they were having about the nonprofit status. And then there was a civil case against the church, and those two guys would get access to the library in the federal building, and they would sneak around the building. And at one point they got into that AUSA's office, that civil AUSA's office, and like stole a bunch of stuff out of there. And then they got blown in because a librarian was like, "What are you guys doing?" And they were like, "Oh," he asked them if they signed in at the front desk, and they were like, "No, we didn't." He's like, "Well, you need to go sign in." And they were acting weird enough that he said something to the I think to the security guard or something. And then at one point they were spotted like around the copy machines inside the U.S. Attorney's office.
Yeah, that's sensitive.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is during the '70s, starting in '69, yeah. I think. 79, 11 convicted, including Mary Sue Hubbard. 5 years, she did 4 years, but burglary, obstruction, theft of government property. Yeah, a little army just invading government installations. And they're all like, what kind of control do you have over a person for that many people? You have 5,000 people that are willing to do that. Like what kind of mind control do you have? How do you instill that kind of mind control in 5,000 people and keep the secret? That's the best part. Their OPSEC's the best part. I mean, I know they did get caught by a librarian, but that's a lot of that's very good operational security.
Yeah, and I guess it took the Bureau a little while to tie them to the church, because that they had to have they were in there talking about like cover stories.
Yeah.
And the Bureau finally was like, "Well, wait a minute. These guys have ties to the Church of Scientology." And then I think I just started rolling from there. And then they raided the offices in DC for the church. And then of course there was a lot of stalling tactics on behalf of the church. Like I read that they had filed, like they had subpoenaed like 150 government agents or something, trying to slow the whole process down. Because I mean, you know, the
running that influence
when you're prosecuting, when you're conducting a criminal prosecution, time is not your friend if you're the government, right?
Nope.
The longer that whole thing gets dragged out, your chances of being successful. So the defense's job is to drag that thing out as long as possible, and that's what they did.
And they have an army. They have armies of lawyers, but they won. Operation Snow White was a win for the Church of Scientology. 1993, they got their tax exempt status back.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So
I don't doubt it.
No, it says I just found it on the Google machine. I found it. The Googles. But yeah, that's what gets me though, is the dedication by relatively, I keep saying, intelligent human beings that, you know, these people will buy into a, quotes, for those of you who can't see me, I'm air quoting, a religion created by a sci-fi author that is a clear fraud, I mean, from the get-go, but you find 5,000 people who buy it enough to infiltrate, to take on positions with the purpose of infiltrating the U.S. government on behalf of this cult. There's a lot. There's a lot to unpack there.
It's a cult. It's actually a cult with. It's like a multi-level marketing scheme.
It is a multi-level.
If you really yeah, like, yeah. I've watched. Was it Leah? What's her name? Leah Rahimi
Remy.
Or something?
Leah Remy. Yeah.
Remy. Yeah. Remy. I watched her thing a couple of times. I've seen, because it's fascinating. But when you really think about it, like, you have to pay to get membership in the church, and then in order to get to different levels of the church, like, you have to, you know, pay money, right? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is, it's, if you stop and really think about it, it's a multi-level marketing scheme. And really what you're doing is you're selling self-help stuff. Because that's what it is, right?
The tools, like, with all the tools.
Yeah. It's like, you gotta rise to the top of Dianetics, you know, like
Dianetics.
In all honesty, there's a lot of, especially in the, you know, the celebrity community, a lot of those people have, like, you know, mental issues, right? Like depression, anxiety, and they're always looking for. And then they get really into, like, Eastern medicine, you know, which is okay. Like, you can get into Eastern medicine, but they have that buy into it. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, if you think about it, I mean, most of the celebrities that we talk about, they were waiters and waitresses who just happened to be in the right place at the right time, who influenced society over and over and over again. So when we expect them to be paragons of independent thinking and clear, I guess clear-headed is probably not the right word to say in Scientology. It's like, yeah, we put a lot of faith in people who, slinging.
What's interesting is a lot of them owe their success to the church itself, right?
The network.
Yeah, the network is. I mean, there's a lot of, like, I mean, look at, you know, Tom Cruise. He seems to be doing well. If you're going to talk about anybody being, like, some kind of, like, you know, cybernetic creature or something, like, look, he doesn't look like he's aged at all. It's very strange. No,
it's him and Travolta are like, I guess they're like, hey, it works. Yeah. Clearly it works. It works for these two.
Yeah. What is William Shatner a Scientologist?
You know what? That's one. I've got my tablet open right in front of me, and I'm not going to search that because it would ruin my childhood if it turned out to be true.
No, so William, but it goes along the same lines. If you're gonna make William Shatner, like, the guy's like 90 something years old, and he doesn't look a day over 70, right?
He just went to space, didn't he?
I know, of course he did.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm 90 years old and somebody asked me if I want to go to space, I'm gonna be like, yeah, what else have I got to do? Shatner is not a Scientologist.
Oh, thank God.
I had to search that. I was getting scared.
Maybe there's two theories packed in there, you know, or maybe it's just a lot of Botox or something. Who knows?
You know, the guy's a natural. It's everybody always just wants to talk about Star Trek when it comes to Shatner. Everybody forgets about T.J. Hooker.
T.J. Hooker.
That man could slide across the hood of a cruiser like nobody. Like.
Oh yeah,
and rocking with Heather Locklear. I mean, they were the best cops LA's ever seen.
Oh yeah, for sure. at least in the make believe. That's
right.
True.
They had those J turns knocked out. It was good. It was good stuff. You know, 6 year old me loved it.
You and I were talking the other day about, or you had sent me a text message asking me if I watched that thing with David Grush, and I didn't get a chance to watch it, but what I did spend time on was trying to understand the fourth dimension. For those who are listening, we're talking about aliens, right? And
that's the thing. I'm really, really trying hard. To Grush. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been really trying, because this is something that he mentioned like very briefly in his congressional testimony that kind of, I was like, that's very interesting. So there's an idea, there's a couple of different ideas, right? So like the mainstream idea is that these craft the U.S. government have come into possession are from outer space, right? They're from some other planet, you know, Zeta Reticuli or something, you know, like some far off constellation, you know. One of the other theory that really is frankly more interesting to me is the idea that they're not from outer space. They're from a different dimension.
See, I love that. I love that idea. I mean, if you think about it, the distances alone, and yeah, that's why I brought up Grush to you, because not so much for that part, but that part I want to talk about. But he cleared all this stuff through Dopser. Like he's gone through the Department of Defense Office of Pre-Publication Security Review. He referenced it while he was on Rogan. Like, I've listened to his congressional statements. But on Rogan, I'm sitting there, and every time he says something, he's like, yeah, this has gone through Dopser. He's like, hey, everybody listening, I went through Dopser, I swear to God, blatantly talking about multiple vehicles under the control of the U.S. government for years. But yeah, like, okay, so if we can, I'm just like, and that's why I texted you. I'm like, because up till now, I'm like, you know what, that thing with the, you know, chasing, what's his name? The F-18 pilot chasing that thing, that's a pretty cool story. Grush is a pretty cool story. And I'm like, but I'm listening to him like, all right, so this is clear through Dopser. There's U.S. government said, go ahead and talk about all this stuff. I'm like, what? So I'm I don't know, my head's to the point where I'm like, it was getting weird enough that I was like, we should probably talk about this. But yeah, let's think about this in reality. Like, to get to the closest planet is what, 5 years by speed of light? Like, is that what it is? I'm not even sure.
Oh, the closest Alpha, planet? I don't know
Centauri
that it's...
No, or something like that?
Oh, you're talking about the next...
next closest...
next galaxy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what's...
Because, I mean, we can get to the next... We can get to Mars in 2 years if you... I think it's 2 years if you put people on a... You know, like a traditional spacecraft and go to...
Yeah, that's
one of the things I'm just pulling this up because I want to talk about this afterwards because it's super interesting. But I was just pulling it up so I was right and knowing what I was talking about because I've read about it. But I think that what's really interesting to me, like I said, was that whole like figuring out the fourth dimension, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard for, from what I understand, like you have to have a deep knowledge of physics to really understand it. But the best, because we live in three dimensions, but we only perceive two. Does that make sense?
I'm trying to think, because live in three dimensions. I always thought the fourth dimension was time, right?
Yeah, in a way, I think that's true. But we live in three dimensions and we only perceive two.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about like being able to perceive three dimensions, your brain makes that up.
Yeah.
So like we can only, if you were to take the image off of the back of your eye, it's very flat, right? From what I understand. So the theory there would be that if you were a fourth dimension being, you would perceive all three dimensions. So you couldn't perceive the fourth, but you could perceive three. And the way that they use these analogies, and the one analogy that really rung true to me, which makes total sense, if you were a two-dimensional being, and like I remember this was on the Big Bang Theory where Sheldon
was flat, there's a book,
yeah,
isn't there a book?
I forget what it's called, but if you're a two-dimensional being and you put, you know, you have some kind of valuable, and since it's all shapes, we'll just say like geometric, you take a diamond and you put it inside of a box and you close and lock that box, right? A three-dimensional being can just lean down, pick that thing up out of that box, right? Even though you locked him.
Yeah.
Right? No, no. And you're like basically a god, right? Mm-hmm. As a three-dimensional being in a two-dimensional plane, right?
Yeah.
And what I'm having trouble with, and maybe we need to like, let's get a physicist or something on here to like explain right. this stuff. What I'm having trouble like visualizing is what the fourth dimension looks like. I was watching this thing where it was a box that always was like almost like moving within itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what they're using to explain it. But I know the fourth dimension is time. So, but does that mean that they're time travelers? Like, what is that? I don't know what that means.
When I think about it, and it's very, very limited in scope because I'm not a physics guy, but like if we talk about, you know, they've talked about before, the only way to do space travel is to take space time and be able to generate something to fold space time together and bridge those two points
you want
to go to a wormhole. So the way I think about it in my very unenlightened mind, if we're going to talk about that dimensional parallel dimensional thing, which would be a lot of fun in the writing world, instead of folding our space time into and jumping between two points in our space time, we're making a bridge and jumping to another space time, a dimensional shift to, and instead of going to someplace on our chessboard, we go to someplace on a completely different chessboard. So maybe we think about it as in 3D chess. We've got base level 2 and 3. When we fold space time, we're not folding the first level chessboard. We're folding the left half of the first level chessboard and the right half of the second level chessboard and jumping there. That's the way I think of it. But I'm probably way off in
John, we're going to have to retire first.
I'm in fiction land.
Yeah, no, we're going to have to retire.
That's the way I would explain it when I do write the book with dimensional travelers in it. That's how I'm going to explain it.
Yeah. we're going to have to wait for weed to get legalized in our state before we figure that one out.
Yeah, we're going to have to retire. We're going to have to retire for
that. Yeah, we're going to retire.
That's going to be a great conversation, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, the way you put it, that makes sense to me. It just wasn't, you know, when I was reading about it, it's so far, you know, afield. I imagine if I kept reading about it, I'd probably understand. But I liked the 2D versus 3D.
Like 2D versus 3D.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah. Let's get a physicist on here and get them to.
We're going to find a physicist and be like, look, dude, I actually did that once. I was in, what was I doing? I was working a case that took me to University of Buffalo. And I just ended up like talking to physicists about it. And I can't for the life of me remember what it was. But these dudes were like quantum physicists. And I'm like sitting there and it was something. I don't know. I don't remember if it was a fraud or a theft. But I'm talking to these guys as I'm getting their background. I'm like, quantum physicists. I was like, all right, I get done with all my casework, all my case stuff. And I'm like, hey, fellas, can you tell me what spooky action at a distance means? And they both just like stop. And they're like they would have like they couldn't change channels. Like they're just like,
you're witnessing a computer glitch.
Yeah. Why is this FBI guy asking about spooky action at a distance? He's like, well, it's actually called this. I was like, well, I didn't know that. We're off to a great start. Tell me all about it.
It's funny. Yeah. It's funny. Like when I was working cases, I had to deal with this guy. He was a high level, like we'll call him like a computer science. I mean, he has a doctorate in like computer stuff, but like, you know, quantum, using like quantum computing and all sorts of crazy things. And all I could remember was like the guy literally reminded me of like Doogie Howser. Like he looked like he was 16, but he was like 40 years old. And he had like these big glasses. He looked like Bill Gates, but like worse, you know,
even more awkward,
but super interesting guy. But it's gotta be exhausting, talking to guys like us.
Oh God. Yeah.
Because you have to dumb the science down for us. Right. Like we can't just get together and have a conversation about, you know, whatever, you know, quantum computing. Like I have no, frame of reference.
So you'd have to really
sit down and dumb it down for me.
Yeah. And we were just hanging out in like his office and stuff like that. And it was like, you could tell that his water cooler talk was not my level of water cooler talk. So he was like very nice, but it's exactly, I got the same vibe. He's like, why am I talking to a Neanderthal about quantum physics?
Yeah. Yeah. What's funny is
I fully admit that was accurate.
I've talked to a lot of, like, in my career in law enforcement, like, I've talked to a lot of, like, scientists and stuff. And what I found is there's a common thread. Like, most of them are insane. Like, they're crazy people, right?
Right.
Just some of the things, like, and the way their brains work is like, it's not linear. It's weird. It's not a spaghetti bowl. Like, they're straight lines, right? But they could end up, you know, a gajillion different places because, you know, their mind's on like a different level than us normal people, right?
Yeah. And just keeping up is just trying to hang on for some of these guys. It's just cool having that conversation, like having that access to that kind of expert. It's like, I'm going to take advantage of this. And they never saw it coming.
Yeah. They all kind of remind me of like Doc Brown from,
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Cause we had a bunch of engineering companies in Buffalo, and it was talking to those uber smart guys that are like the dudes that you would want building the spaceship that Musk is building. Like, that guy, I'd be like, yes, yeah. I trust you. I don't trust.
That's like the one-off is, you know, that guy that they have on Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh,
the NASA dude? Scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's some good old Southern boy that's got a doctorate in physics, you know? And you totally, like, if you met him in a grocery store, you wouldn't think he has a doctorate in physics, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, you want to go barbecue. The guy lives in a trailer park somewhere, you know?
Yeah, you want to go just barbecue with that guy and then be like, you know what we need? Lasers.
Lasers. Yeah.
Yep.
He's like, let's talk about string theory, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm along for the ride, Doc. I'm not going to pick it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? I'll reach out and see if I can get that guy. You know, they're not, they can't be filming right now. I'll be like, hey, come tell us about the fourth dimension.
Come talk to us about the fourth dimension. We want to know all about it. And what's interesting is it looks like, you know, if you're watching the show, I mean, it looks like that's what they might be dealing with, you know?
I love it. So, yeah, I'm an objective minded skeptic, but I have the standing, just statement that would the world be cooler if there was Bigfoot? Yes. Would the world be cooler if UFOs were buzzing around? Absolutely right. Do I have any idea where any of those things are? Nope.
No, I draw the line at face hugging aliens. Like, I'm good. We don't need to have that. you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that would make things exciting, but it probably wouldn't go well for us.
No, it never does in any aliens movie.
They never win.
No, we always lose. They always end up somewhere else. We always end up finding them again. And then, you know, it's a struggle. The ones that freak me out.
Were the pod people. Like, that's the one that freaks me out. You just kind of get your replacement and they tap you on the shoulder one day and you're done. Like, that's,
you know, that's a euphemism for communism.
I read that someplace. The original. Yeah. Yep. I mean, yeah, what is it? They if they can get somebody to agree with something so irrational that they finally give up on their own belief system, get some
values. They give up
their own values. Yep. Yeah. That's why they push all these ridiculous things. And you can see many parallels to our own society today.
This is like one last thing. Have you heard of, it's called Stardust Ranch. It's in Nevada.
No. But it sounds like, isn't that a brothel? I guess.
No. Well, I guess maybe it could be. No, Stardust Ranch is.
I'm Googling it, but I feel like sully my computer.
So it's, your wife's kind of like, what have you been looking at on the internet?
That's a caveat.
I was hanging out with Brian. Oh, okay. So this guy bought this ranch in Nevada and. The long and the short of it is he was having multiple encounters with what we would coin to be aliens. And what was interesting is that he had figured out whether this is true or not. It's all very fascinating, but he wrote a book. And what's interesting about it is he allegedly he says he's killed them.
Ooh, nice.
And what he found was that they're not aliens. They're actually from the fourth dimension, which when this was happening was kind of like pre that discussion. So he kind of figured that out on his own. And he figured out you couldn't kill them with guns. You had to kill them with samurai swords.
That's awesome. I love that guy. Okay. So, I'm saying this while we're recording right now, because Stardust Ranch immediately comes up. And it immediately comes up on TripAdvisor, and immediately it's got several reviews, but its best one from Anonymous in 22. Let's see, this is clubs like Stardust Ranch usually offer set rates around 200 for 30 to 60 minutes, decent bar, new competition across the way. The brothel, it's one of the older brothels, so I was right. Regardless, I've met some great women and had some great parties. This dude loved Stardust Ranch enough to Yelp it on TripAdvisor. So
that's funny.
When you're, for everybody else, when you follow Lee Belt's advice and go Google and Stardust Ranch, make sure it's not the brothel. It's the one from Ghost Adventures.
You know, it's
Adventures.
Weird. It must be based on your like your search history, because when I hit Stardust Ranch, I don't see any brothels here.
I'm on Brave. There is no search history.
I'm on
DuckDuckGo.
You're one of those guys. Yeah, I got to worry about you.
Government can't find me. I got a duck handling my algorithm.
I use the duck.
The duck.
No, so the guy.
No, it was my first one was Ghost Adventures, Zach Baggins and Stardust Ranch.
Oh yeah. The first one I see is like for the Travel Channel. But anyway,
yeah.
The guy, like it's from what I didn't read the book, but there's a book. It's by the guy. I think his name is it John Edmonds? Oh, yeah, it's John Edmonds. He purchased this thing in 96. He hung on to it for like 20 years and basically had all these crazy things happen. Allegedly, of course. He could be completely full of himself. But he like allegedly killed one. And I guess he talks about like the strategy that he had to use. Because what was funny was there was a video on the it was like a claymation video of this guy like he gets visited by aliens and then they try to like take his kid and he ends up like stabbing them all with samurai swords and stuff and I was like, what is that all about? So then I started looking and I'm like, oh, it's the Stardust Ranch thing, it's this whole story. But it's
I'm a fan.
the desert is a strange place.
Yeah, it is. Desert is an odd joint. It's there's a lot of space out there. But okay, he had a alien infestation, made national headlines. They actually levitated my wife out of bed. The master's chamber. They have a master's chamber. Yeah, nice. I don't think you can say that anymore.
No. But no, there's there was. I mean, you and I knew somebody that was from. Roswell, right?
I've been to Roswell.
What's interesting,
like
when
6 weeks out there, yeah.
Yeah, what was interesting is I point blank like asked her like how much weird stuff have you seen, and she's like, it's so weird there that you just get like used to it. And I guess her father or uncle or something was like part of the whole Roswell like incident.
Yeah, like the whole I spent 3 weeks out there and I just started asking everybody I could see point blank. I'm like, tell me about the aliens. Everybody had a story.
It's crazy
the way it is. Yeah, I thought it was cool. Still
but she told me a story about like they were at a high school football game.
She told me that
just
story.
Like a rant, like yeah, like a high school football game, and there's like UFOs flying by. Like
yeah, hundreds of people just watching normal. UFOs. Watching UFOs, yeah. Just kind of hang out, watch the second half.
yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, touchdown. Nice. Oh, what the hell? Like, oh, did we just score?
Somebody did. But man, I hate to do it. We definitely have to do this again, but I gotta wrap it up. I gotta go take care of the wee ones before the school week starts.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is good fun, stuff. Man. This is a kind of different take on the That's Criminal. So we definitely have to do this again. If you know any physicists, that'd be super fun for the two of us to interrogate them while we're recording. I think we could crush it.
I know some, like, a guy I went to high school with has like his PhD in virology, which would not, like, unless we wanted to talk about COVID or something.
I'm sure he knows somebody. Let's do it. Yeah.
I'm like, hey, Chris, we need somebody that can explain the fourth dimension. You got any friends that can? Yeah. I was like, I don't think we have enough money to get what's his name, the guy that comes on all the podcasts and talks about science.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, I don't think we have enough money for that. This is too low rent.
He doesn't seem too into it. I don't think we'd get very far with him. But maybe that dude's on an off his off shooting schedule from Skinwalker Ranch. Maybe we'll grab that guy. He seems like a personal that guy would dude. Be cool.
Yeah. We still got to get the maybe I'll start harassing him too. The guy from
Tales from the Grid Square.
Tales from the Grid Square.
Yeah, hit that guy up because he got back to me once. I haven't heard from him since. So
yeah, I should say, hey man, you gotta reach out to John and we gotta have a conversation because he had a thing on his YouTube channel about Fort Drum, which was gnarly.
He's got great stories.
Because I know the spots that they were talking about. I know exactly where those things are. And there's a lot of, believe it or not, like upstate New York there's a lot of like UFO sightings and stuff in upstate New York.
Upstate New York does have its fair share. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely a future episode.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. But thanks, man. I appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Good to be here,
everybody.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.